The Guardian.
Hello and welcome to Tech Weekly from The Guardian. I'm Alex Kratosky. On this week's podcast, we're looking at the announcements that have come from the West Coast of America, the Electronic Entertainment Expo, the games event of the year, and the Worldwide Developers Conference, Apple's gathering of developers. I've been shocker with news. We've got Keith Stewart on the ground in L.A., pounding the show floor to the chaotic sounds of the electronic fairground at E3, where we'll hear about whether Sony saved itself from oblivion after a fractious year of business hiccups, the latest human-computer interaction innovations on the Xbox from Microsoft, and the next-generation console from Nintendo. And we've got the latest on the new operating systems and cloud computing music service from Apple in San Francisco. Joining me in the studio is Charles Arthur. Charles, welcome.
Well, hello.
And down the line, we've got Jemima Kish. Welcome back, Jemima.
Oh, hello. I've got the builders in. I don't know if you can hear.
Well,
I don't
mean
that metaphorically. I mean, you know, there actually are some builders. Very noisy. There you go.
There they are. They're representing. That's quite nice. How was your time away, Jemima, offline?
Oh, it was lovely. I'm entirely offline for an entire month. It's just such a luxury. But actually, it really makes you appreciate being online that much more. So I heartily recommend it.
Well, I'm currently undergoing an experiment myself of not interacting with Twitter except via third-party apps through services like Flickr or blogging. And yeah, it's difficult to just push and not pull.
It reminds me of an episode of Thomas the Tank Engine. That's another story.
Charles, have you ever been tempted to take yourself offline?
I do regularly. I mean, about once a year, I go on a holiday with the family and we just don't do any internet at all. It's good, actually.
It is, isn't it?
Yeah. I'm surprised that more people don't do it. It's sort of like a holiday from the madness.
You feel a little bit compelled, though. Jemima, you had a great article in The Observer a few weeks ago looking at that. But looking forward, we'll be looking at this week's news from around the web. So keep listening to Tech Weekly from The Guardian. Last week, Keith Stewart gave us a preview on the podcast of what he expected to be big in L.A. at the Electronic Entertainment Expo, or E3. This week, he reports from Los Angeles, where the major players have made their big announcements. Ah, the insanity of the games industry. Well, Nintendo's press event was larger than usual, as the Japanese company, consistently revolutionizing the home console industry throughout its 20-year history, unveiled their next innovation. Let's head to the E3 floor, where Keith Stewart finds out the latest from Nintendo's new console launch.
I'm with Danny Bilson, head of THQ, outside the Nintendo conference. Danny, what do you think of Wii U?
I love it. We're really going to support it in some interesting ways. Darksiders 2 will be a launch title on it. The team in Austin has been working on it for weeks already. They've got it up and running. And Darksiders 2 has a really deep inventory system, really deep, like lots of collectible loot. And you can have your inventory screen live on the controller the whole time you're playing the game. And we've got a few other surprises coming on the platform. So we're really excited. We're also really excited to have another platform for our core games division at THQ. Really excited. It gives us a third place. But really, of course, the challenge is make each one unique and special for the hardware, and that's what our creative teams are working on.
Yeah. It's interesting as well with Darksiders being a launch title. I mean, that is a very kind of hardcore game, isn't it? And that seems to be the message that Nintendo are getting. They're kind of welcoming back the hardcore gamers, aren't they?
Yeah, I think you might have noticed Metro Last Light in there also, which is about as hardcore as it gets. Aside from maybe Saints Row the Third, that may be the ultimate in wildness.
What's been interesting and impressive to you so far, apart from Nintendo's stuff?
I have kids, so I'm really excited about the Disneyland game on the Kinect. And, of course, Battlefield 3 I'm really looking forward to because I love those kind of games. I was just speaking with my friends from EA, and they're going to take me in for a front-of-the-line demo of the multiplayer, so I'm excited about that as well.
I'm outside Nintendo Conference again with the Oliver Twins from Blitz Game Studios. Impressions of Nintendo Wii U?
It's a fantastic new system. It's really... They always come up with some innovation, and who would have thought they would have come up with a sort of like graphic tablet that connects with your TV? Incredible innovation, and I can see that it would be really nice. I mean, we're all getting used to these tablets and using our iPads and saying that they're quite nice tactile to use, but actually having a tablet where you're connecting with that screen and your main TV screen, and you have all the joysticks and controllers and buttons that gamers like, I think it's a winner.
Yeah, I mean, do you think, Philip, Nintendo's strategy seems to be get the hardcore very much on board from the beginning, whereas Wii was more about a casual. Do you think that's the case of trying to bring Nintendo and hardcore gamers back together again?
Absolutely. Although they didn't go into the specification much of the actual hardware, I believe that it's a 1080p 60 frames a second machine, which makes it a lot more powerful than the Xbox 360 and the PS3. The games they were showing are obviously much more hardcore games as well. There's no reason why they can't appeal to everybody, which is what they said they were trying to achieve with this new machine.
Yeah. And do you think this is like where games technology is really going, towards this whole idea of people having one big screen and then little screens that people kind of interact with individually in a sort of family scenario? Do you think this is kind of almost like the future of games?
The whole touch screen and having multiple people in the room at the same time, or one could go up to the bedroom and still carry on playing the game, but it's kind of wirelessly transmitting to your screen. It's a really smart idea, and that's what you need nowadays. I mean, there's so many devices that you can play games on, and everyone has their phones and the different pads and other consoles. To come out with something so unique is brilliant.
What do you think that wireless technology is? Because you were saying it was latency-free. Have you any ideas, any guesses what the wireless technology is that connects the screen to the tablet?
Well, you can now get wireless HDMI so that you don't have to plug in an HDMI cable. They don't need to go with that standard per se, but obviously Wi-Fi has been around for a few years, so the idea of having a super fast Wi-Fi that's transmitting the entire picture sort of around a household, it seems quite doable. I'm not exactly sure the actual specifications, but it seems obvious that is very, very possible in today's technology.
Okay. And Philip, Blitz has often been on board quite early with new technologies, and you're always looking at you're on board very early with 3D before most other people. Are you looking into Wii U development?
Absolutely. We've got lots of meetings at the show. We're already in discussion with several publishers on Wii U games, and we've got some cracking ideas. It does enable some new experiences that we're really excited about.
Yeah. That's great. Thanks very much, Oliver Twins. Thank you very much.
That was Keith at the Nintendo press conference on the floor of E3. Now, this year wasn't just about Nintendo. Sony took this opportunity to reassert itself in the wake of controversies over the security of its PlayStation network and its flailing PlayStation console sales, and Microsoft chose E3 as a launchpad for its slate of Christmas releases and the next iteration of its innovative Kinect service. Keith spoke with Tim Ingham from ComputerAndVideoGames.com and Tim Clark, games editor at Future Publishing. And Tim Ingham began by explaining what impressed him from Monday's announcements by Microsoft and Sony.
Two big highlights, probably Halo 4, even more interestingly, the fact that they said there's going to be a whole new trilogy. I hope that the level of quality remains at that which we saw from Combat Evolved with the first three games, and that they're not going to do a Lucas on us. And then the other interesting thing was EA going into quite so much detail about this online service with Battlefield. It'd be very interesting to see how that pans out, and if perhaps the bigger war with Activision isn't going to be on shelves in sort of October, November time, but actually on the servers and seeing who can build a community, obviously to mirror, as everyone's trying to do, the success of Blizzard.
Yeah, and the service is called Battlelog, isn't it? And it's essentially a service for Battlefield gamers. And it sounds almost exactly the same as Call of Duty Elite, doesn't it? But and I think John Riccitiello made them mention over and over again that it was free, didn't he? So it's almost like a social networking war, but for games, isn't it?
Call of Duty has had this immense online presence for a long, long time, and a number of people who really buy into it, and I'm trying to avoid the word community deliberately, because some may say that they haven't fully capitalised on that community. Lots of rumours about them setting up some kind of premium subscription service for a long, long time. It's interesting that EA has come out less than 2 weeks after Activision took the wraps off Call of Duty Elite, and so they're sort of on more of an even keel than they are when it comes to the AAA box products, where obviously Call of Duty and particularly the Modern Warfare tag has such a prestige and history amongst so many millions of gamers, where Battlefield 3 is really EA taking their franchise to the Premier League, if you like, of FPS.
Yeah. And what did you think of the Microsoft press conference this morning? Because a lot of people have come away from that being quite disappointed. It was very heavily focused on Kinect and very much about pushing Kinect towards hardcore gamers, wasn't it? Is that the feeling you came away with?
It was a slightly odd conference. In that, you're right, there wasn't, other than the Halo announcements, the pair of those, there wasn't really anything that got, what you say, the core gamers all going crazy. It was quite uneven. I think that was the odd thing about the Microsoft display. You had sort of Mass Effect 3 and then the very next moment, Disney, and then you had sort of talking about almost business-like strategic content deals followed by Halo, and it never really seemed to sort of hit its stride. But you know, when you look on paper about what they've announced, that's a funny thing about E3. When you actually sort of calm down and you don't try and buy into the fanfare of it all, when you look what Microsoft have done, I think they've taken major strides toward making Kinect a more credible purchase for a large audience. Mm. And I think some of the stuff you could do in Mass Effect, for instance, is not necessary. It's frills on top, but it will appeal to a large part of that existing audience who perhaps wouldn't have bought into Kinect previously.
Okay, and we're obviously outside the Sony event. We've just been in there. Your reactions coming out?
It was interesting to see a couple of sort of big name developers you'd associate with PC and CCP and Ken Levine of Irrational turning up and seemingly being very PS3 friendly, which is unusual. Sony hasn't always had the best kind of relationship with those sort of guys, so that's, I think, quite exciting. The Vita stuff, the price was, to me, a surprise. Anyway, I expected it to come in higher than that, so that was, I'm sure, a relief for Sony watchers everywhere, amongst whom I would count myself.
They've announced that PlayStation NGP is going to be called Vita, a lot of people assumed, with a price point of $249, I think, for the Wi-Fi version and $299 for the 3G version. Are your readers a hardcore gamer? Is it going to be interested in Vita?
Definitely, there's interest lies there. I mean, there's a talking point about how Sony has done its currency conversion with $249, €249, and there was also lots of twos and fours and nine in the yen price. So I don't know if that's, you know, someone forgot their calculator. I don't think they're going to be too pleased about that. But you know, by and large, across the board, globally, that is a price point that is attractive, even if the Americans perhaps get the best end of the deal. And I think that was the major fear for a lot of people, that NGP, or now Vita, it's going to be hard getting used to calling it that. But that was the major fear, that there would be the sort of price announcement we've seen from Sony in the past. And I think it sounds like they've learnt their lesson about going in expensive and bringing it down. I think this time they're probably aiming for a bigger audience at a more reasonable price.
And what do you think were some of the more interesting games for Vita that they showed off this evening?
I think the Little Big Planet was interesting to see, because with something like Vita and the way that they're obviously trying to combine it with the PlayStation 3 in a more tangible way than PSP ever was, that could really shift the whole Little Big Planet community to being interested in picking up a portable almost just for that game, because they've such a strength of feeling. And I mean, you see it on YouTube, the millions of people who create levels in that game daily, and it seems like this could really enhance that. So that was exciting.
Yeah, they had seemed to have community building as a central point, didn't they? Because they had the Mod Nation races there as well, and creativity and building maps, and they're both Mod Nation races, which is a build at your own circuit racing game, and Little Big Planet, which allows you to build your own levels. They both used a touchscreen a lot, didn't they? And there seems to be a lot of this emphasis on connectivity and community and social networking again.
Yeah, they didn't say the word online too often. You're right, they used the words community. But it was great, you know, that the apology came as early as it did.
So they're apologising for the PSN outage, obviously, and the hacking scandal.
That's right. I was sort of hoping that they might reveal a surprise extra on top of the goodwill package that they've already offered.
They struck the right notes, mostly, from the apology onwards. And there was some games I thought they lingered on too long with demos, when you thought something like Starhawk, I'd rather have seen demoed live than the CG trailer, because it's been being shown all over the place. That was a bit weird.
This is their kind of online sequel to Warhawk, which is a really big online, big multiplayer game, wasn't it, on PlayStation 3?
I think it's the same with all the format holders now. They've got so much to get through in terms of pushing different elements of their kind of strategy. So they've got to tick the move box, they've got to obviously do the new hardware stuff, that some of the core things maybe get a bit... Some odd games get more time than you think they perhaps warrant, whereas other stuff you think, I wish I'd seen a bit more of that. Like there was no Last Guardian, for instance, whereas I'm sure that was pretty high on most people's list of stuff they wanted to see.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. So what do you think of the Vita games? Was anything sort of caught your eye as being something that, you know, your readers are going to be interested in the future?
I think if you look for Sony now, what's really clear is that Uncharted is their kind of, well, it's their Halo game, in the sense it's not like Halo, but it throws off that sort of light, so they're clearly going to use it to push everything they've got.
Yeah.
So it really demonstrated the 3D brilliantly on PS3 for those who like 3D, but also on Vita, it by far and away to me was like the standard bearer for both, like how powerful a machine it is, and also showing how they're going to integrate some of that touchscreen stuff with the rear touch everyone's been having a good laugh about.
So it was interesting the way they're using touch to sort of navigate. There was a section where you were climbing up a wall and you could use touch and wipe across the screen to navigate a route, which is quite interesting.
Yeah, and you imagine it'd be kind of a tough balance to get the difficulty of that right, because it could easily be really easy if you're just tracing a line across some golden glowing blocks. But then I think what was good about it was that it didn't look like you were going to be locked into one control system. You could kind of jump between the two, so that kind of flexibility should be good.
And what about PlayStation 3 games here? Was there anything that caught your eye?
Well, weirdly, because everyone's... Uncharted clearly was the best-looking thing here. I'll be surprised if you see a better-looking game, certainly running on console anyway. Funny enough, I thought Infamous 2, which is out, like, now, was about as good as, amongst the other games, anything they had. I thought it looked really fabulous. I'm always finding it a bit weird that game doesn't get more love than it does get, because it seems to me like a real cut above the kind of like being trapped in a Slipknot video that is something like Prototype. So,
and for the rest of the show, while we're here, what do you think we should all look out for in terms of interesting games?
Probably Hitman, which I've already seen and is looking fantastic, which is IO's new Glacier engine, which I think really can stand toe-to-toe with some of the best engines that we have in the industry, and they've built it, you know, as they like to say, from the ground up. But it did look fantastic in the sheer number of NPCs on one screen at any one time interacting with one another. And then the other one for me is Aliens Colonial Marines from Sega, which I just really, really hope that finally, after the fairly decent effort we saw with from that publisher with Aliens versus Predator, that they're really going to create a premier AAA game with a license which means the world to me, and doubtlessly means the world to millions of other gamers.
I'm really looking forward to Skyrim. I've been watching a lot of Game of Thrones and hoping it's kind of like that, but maybe, I guess, with less boobs. Is that right for The Guardian? So I want to see that. I want to see Hitman Absolution. I'm a big fan of that. I went to see Far Cry for an exclusive yesterday, and that was looking nice. They've gone back to Tropical Island, so it looks like the worst holiday you'll ever have. The island's absolutely infested by complete lunatics wanting to drown and stab and kick you. So
Tropical Island seems to be in this year at E3, don't they? Because obviously Tomb Raider's on a Tropical Island, and then
Tomb Raider's is quite a grim island, though, isn't it? I thought it looked quite. It had like a bit of Resi to it and a bit of Uncharted as well. She did sort of pant and huff a lot in it, didn't it?
There was a lot of there's a lot of vocalisation, wasn't there? Yeah.
But it could be mega annoying over the course of a whole game if she's constantly kind of, you know, semi-orgasmic, but in a scared way.
And on that bombshell.
Keith Stewart on the floor at E3 in Los Angeles. Catch up on the rest of the news from LA at guardian.co.uk/games. While the games industry has been enjoying the glitz and glamour of Hollywood, Apple has been wooing developers in San Francisco at their annual Worldwide Developers Conference. Here's what the Big Apple, Steve Jobs, had to say.
As you recall, iTunes in the cloud is just for the music that you've purchased from the iTunes store. But you may have some that you ripped yourself. And there's three ways you can deal with that. One, you can sync your new devices, and then you can rely on iCloud to take care of getting all your new purchases off iTunes onto that device. Or, if it's just a few songs you love that you don't want to leave behind, you can buy those songs that you'll miss on iTunes. And we're going to offer a third way, which is called iTunes Match. And the chances are awfully good that we've got the songs in our store that you've ripped. And so we wrote software to scan the non-iTunes music and match it up with those songs we have in the store. And so we can give that music the same benefits as music purchased from iTunes, and it takes just minutes, not weeks. If you have to upload your whole library into some locker in the sky, that literally takes weeks. This takes minutes. And the few songs that remain, well, we'll upload them.
That was Steve Jobs with his head in the clouds. Oh, I'm all over it today. Jemima, what is the iCloud?
iCloud really just takes Apple one certainly very needed step forward, but particularly big step forward in terms of the experience that their consumers will have from now on. iCloud takes all of those important sort of sets of data that you use on your phone, so mail, contacts, photos, and it puts those all on the iCloud service, which means you have three Apple devices. If you have an iPhone, an iPad, and a MacBook, say, instead of the data living on one of those, it will live in the cloud, and then all three of those devices can access that data from the cloud instead. So if you're extremely unlucky and or careless with your devices, like me, and keep losing them, in theory, you can't lose your data any longer.
What if, does it work on different devices as well? Say, if I have a PC, can I access?
It also works on Windows Vista, and it works on Windows 7. I mean, the reason why Apple has rolled it out to those, or is providing APIs for that, is because there are more people using iOS devices like iPads and iPhones on Windows machines than there are on Apple MacBooks and stuff. Simply because there's tons more PCs than there are Apple devices out there.
What's the benefit, though, of using iCloud versus something like Google, which it sounds like does similar services, especially with their latest announcements, and Amazon, which also has its own cloud service, and again recently made announcements about, for example, streaming music services?
So the key thing that iCloud is doing, which the services from Google and from Microsoft, which offers SkyDrive, which is 25 gigs of free cloud space, and which Amazon is offering, which is a digital music locker. What Apple is doing with iCloud is it pushes changes. So if you make a change to, say, your photos or a particular document or to your calendar, then it all gets pushed automatically to all these different devices that you've got signed up with your iCloud account. The thing that is not done, say, with SkyDrive or with Google or with Amazon, is that you don't get these changes pushed among the devices. So, for example, with Google Docs, okay, yes, if you're viewing those on different devices, then changes you make on one device will appear on the other. But what Google has is it's got a music offering, same as Amazon has. Amazon's is the music locker, where you have to upload your music to the locker. Costs $50 a year, and then you can stream it down.
And that you can stream it down across any device, anywhere you are?
Any device that offers the Amazon streaming player. It's a bit of a sort of complicated, you might do it, it's a bit of a document thing sometimes. Mostly it's about music. It's not very convenient. That's because Amazon didn't get the agreement with the record labels. With Google, there's a Google Music Beta, which is similar. But again, Google didn't get all the agreement with the music labels as to quite how it could work. So it's a bit like Last.fm, it's a bit like a radio station. It doesn't quite work as exactly as you'd like it. What Apple has done with iTunes Match is that you can say, okay, Apple, have a look at my iTunes library. Here's all the songs I've got. And it says, oh, right, okay, yeah, sure, we got all these songs on the iTunes store. So, bam, this list just appears in the cloud of songs you've already got. Where it finds songs, and my understanding is it does it by the ID3 tags rather than MD5 or anything really complicated like that. It just looks at what the tags are for the music on your thing, and if it says, no, we don't sell that, then it will upload it to your iCloud store, and that will be part of your 5 gigs of space. And then it's available for you to download, not to stream, so unlike Amazon in that sense, down to your iOS device or possibly, certainly, your Windows PC, your Windows Vista, Windows 7 PC, or your iPhone or iPad.
Jemima, this is quite an interesting, as you say, very consumer, customer-focused service, because it means now you don't have to hook your iPhone or iPad up to a desktop or a laptop anymore in order to sync. So that's quite nice. But surely this opens them up to the potential for real piracy.
Well, they'd have to be using the same Mac account. So it would take some amount of organization, and there is a limit of 10 devices per account. So there's some protection built in there. I don't doubt that, you know, if you really want to pirate music, you're going to find a way to do it. And there will be other protections that we'll find out about that Apple has put in place.
Well, speaking though,
it was interesting to hear Steve Jobs last night at the announcement say that what this is about is effectively demoting the Mac, so that it's no longer, the desktop computer is no longer the center of your digital world. The center of your digital world is now in the cloud. It lives in the cloud. And the analysts were very quick to point out that this is likely to encourage people to spend a lot more time and money on Apple's devices. So it's likely to further push the sales of iPads and iPhones, because it's going to be that much easier to live your life through those rather than your desktop.
It is a huge move. I mean, this idea of it's not the computer on your desk that's the hub, it's the cloud that is the hub, is a really big change. I mean, January 2001, Steve Jobs pitched the idea of the digital hub, and the whole thing where, you know, the Mac, as it was then, was going to be the digital hub for your films and for your music and for your photos and for your, you know, all this other stuff. Now, 10 years later, that's moved on to the cloud, and that's a really big move. That's a really futuristic move, I guess, if you like. I mean, a lot of people say, no, never going to happen. No, it's always going to be the PC on my desktop. That's going to be where it is. But you've got to remember, what Apple tends to do is Apple is about 3 or 4 or 5 years ahead of where the rest of the PC industry tends to catch up to eventually. So with Wi-Fi, wasn't necessarily the first with Wi-Fi built in, but it was the one which said, yeah, Wi-Fi is a big thing, and I made a lot of it with the iBook, and that was back in 2001 again.
Then they got rid of the hard drive, which was then, quite a massive...
The floppy drive, yeah. The floppy drive with, yeah, the iMac in 1998. All these sorts of things, you know, it leads the industry. Apple was the first really to say, yeah, laptops are actually where it's at, not the desktops. And what you see now is that in terms of how many laptops sell compared to desktops, across the industry, Apple does about 75% laptops. Across the industry, it's about 66%. So it's just all following behind. You know, Apple tends to make these moves first, then the rest of the industry, you know, catches up on it.
Jemima, I just want to jump back very quickly to the notion of the music system. As Charles was explaining it, you know, what the system does is it takes a look at the list of music that you have on iTunes currently, and then it matches that music, and then sort of imports it from its own library, and that's what sits in the cloud. Is this effectively an amnesty for pirated music? You know, there's, if I've got stuff, perhaps things that I have accessed illegally on my iTunes, it's there, it's on my machine. If it then goes up to the cloud, to iCloud, it's on the list. Does that mean that I just get all that stuff for reals for free?
Well, Apple will have thought about this long and hard before they launched this, and it is being called an amnesty. That's exactly the word that had been talked about when some sources had predicted this service. And it's exactly what they've gone for. So there will have been some long and hard negotiations, I think, with the music industry about the exact terms of this. If there is sort of random, rare music that isn't in iTunes, then you can upload that rather than kind of matching your existing music collection. 4 million copies of, I don't know, Coldplay, or, well, no, the kids aren't listening to that these days. You know what I mean? The more random music you can upload. If it's pirated, though, who's gonna know if it's pirated? I mean, Apple will have the receipt, so Apple knows. Would they tell the record company if the receipts don't match up? If it's ripped, that I think is legal in the US and not in the UK. There are all sorts of complications here. So, if it is an amnesty, I think the music industry is finally had a little bit of a sort of a wake-up call and thought, well, this is a moment actually where we have a chance to consolidate a lot of the activity that's been going on and start fresh.
I've got to say that when I met music publishers in about 2000, this was exactly the idea they had, which was that Napster would pay them some money per track that was being shared.
Charles, I want to move forward to some of the other announcements. They also announced details of their two new operating systems, ones for their handheld devices like the iPad and the iPhone and the iPods, which is the iOS, and then there's the desktop and laptop, which is now called OS X Lion.
Lion,
rawr. Tell me a little bit about the new iOS, because it's interesting, isn't it, that they seem to have integrated some of the best known and most loved apps into their operating system, things like Instapaper. And what else is new?
What's really interesting is that they've basically baked Twitter into the whole of the system, so that from your maps or from your photos or direct from your camera or from your email, you can do things with so you can tweet them directly. So it's a sort of Twitter is anointed by Apple. You know, it's now recognized as being essential. Interesting that Facebook isn't in there in the same way at all. You know, why is it that Twitter gets it and Facebook doesn't?
Yeah, Microsoft owns bits of Facebook,
well,
doesn't it?
Yeah, could be that. I mean, it is intriguing that you don't get that. So, you know, photos, camera, Safari, YouTube, Maps, you can tweet stuff directly from them out to Twitter. The other thing that I think is two other things that are really interesting about the new iOS 5, which is coming in the autumn, when you should also expect it to feature on a new iPhone, where I'm hearing that it's going to be called the iPhone 4GS rather than iPhone 5. But the interesting things are notifications. One of the areas where the iPhone has lagged behind Google's Android for quite a long time now is how it handles incoming news, incoming stuff about, you know, you've got a text message, you've got a Twitter message, you've got an email. Android, to my mind, has been handling this far better for ages, where it has a little notifications bar in the top of the screen, which you can pull down and see what's going on. Apple has always had these sort of interrupting little things which come up and say, hey, I got a text message for you, you know, stop doing everything. What's basically happening is that Apple has said, oh, we like that Android messaging. It's rather good. And they've hired the guy who came up with a clean idea for how to do that. And surprise, surprise, it now looks like the notification center, which you're going to see in iOS 5, will look exactly like the Android version. So I think that's Apple capitalizing and saying that's really good.
Well, it seems actually that if it ain't broke, don't fix it. We'll just integrate it into our system is one of the other things that they've done. Isn't it, Jemima? Because as I mentioned, Instapaper and some of the other services, not Don't Forget Your Milk, I can't remember the name of that app.
Remember the Milk.
Remember the Milk, thank you. Yes, and yeah. Dropbox and various other things are now integrated, but they're sort of Apple white labels as opposed to these indie apps that people fought long and hard to develop and to push out to the crowd.
Well, this is the thing. I mean, this is if you're an app developer who's dependent on Apple, I think that's a very risky position to put yourself in, because Apple can, at whim, completely undo everything about your business. If you look at their new reminders features, actually, it's really quite cool, but it's not doing anything that apps haven't been doing already. So it's a reminders list. It's a bit like really souped-up stickies. But these stickies can be triggered by your location. So it can remind you to do something if you leave work, for example. So it's really cool. But, yeah, a reminder, again, that app developers just really have to be on their toes, I think.
I mean, one of the things I just think is very interesting in iOS 5 is iMessage, which has come as a surprise to all the phone operating companies, but will also be something of a cold bath for RIM, because what it does is it means that you can message other people who have an iOS device directly without having to go through the text message system. So it's exactly like text messaging, except it's sort of data, so it's free in effect, and it's exactly like BlackBerry Messenger. And BlackBerry Messenger is one of the big selling points among teens and among people in Middle Eastern countries, because it goes between BlackBerries, you can just directly connect to each other. But Apple is going after RIM here, and it's with iMessage, it's really trying to have some of that market for itself. It's really trying to encourage people to go away from RIM, go on to the iOS platform.
Jemima, what is the incentive for developers to do something new on this system if, in fact, all of these things are just going to be integrated into the next version, say, in 2 years' time? This is going to be integrated into the new system and your entire business model will be undermined.
I suppose, in a way, imitation is the greatest form of flattery. And it is a relatively small number of features that are being integrated. I mean, there are still... And the incentives massively outweigh the risks. And there are still enormous benefits to being on a vast, vast system that's extremely consumer-friendly and consumer-focused.
Does Artley have something to say, Jemima?
Your son? He was he was just really feeling for the developers. He was very concerned.
Poor kid.
For Instapaper in particular, which is a big favourite of his.
And Charles, briefly, tell me what's new on the OS X Lion platform.
The big thing I think about Lion is that it's going to be the first non-disc version of a major operating system anywhere. You're only going to be able to download it through the Mac App Store, which is actually built into the Snow Leopard 10.6.7 onwards version of OS X. So you'll have to be on that before you can get that. It's then a 4 gig download. Has lots of things. It looks very iPad-y in terms of how it works. But you know, that's the headline news, is no more discs.
Well, for more details and analysis of the services, read more at guardian.co.uk/technology. Well, that's it for this week. Many thanks to Keith Stewart for pounding the floor in LA this week at E3, and to Charles in the studio and Jemima and Artley down the line. The producer this week was Scott Colley. I'm Alex Kratosky. Thanks for listening. See you next week.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.